to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 73. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee is with me. We are at home in Las Vegas, but it is an event week. UFC 202 is this Saturday night. Tonight, we come to you from an institution in Las Vegas, a place that we like to hang out. That is Naked City Pizza inside Moondoggy's Tavern, Arvo and Spring Mountain. If you're ever in Las Vegas and you want to get away from the strip, get you some damn fine food, this is the place to do it. Joining us this evening, our man from across the pond, Simon Head, is here. Mike Bond is over there in the background. He'll be with us later. The Australian crew is rolling in here. Our man, Adam Hill. We're rolling deep tonight here at Naked City Pizza. Gentlemen, how you guys doing?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling much better now. We had gracious people on the table behind us, kicked us some food while we got in here. I mean, that just shows you how polite and caring Vegas people are, even though they're probably tourists.
Simon, I think, is a little bit grossed out. I admit it's a bit of a risk. There was a massive sheet of pizza that these people did not consume, and they were like, hey, we're done if you want to eat this.
I think you accept it if they offer it, right? But I've taken a close look at it, and I'm waiting for the pepperoni one to arrive. when you can't identify all the ingredients, then I'm slightly dubious. There's extra layers of cheese on there that I'm not sure are
ricotta
actually cheese.
Ricotta cheese, mozzarella cheese.
Loads of ricotta on there. It's awesome. All right, well, listen. As cold coffee is getting down on a slice of pizza over there, getting back in the game, it's late in the evening on Thursday. It's been a damn busy day from start to finish. We've had all kinds of stuff going on. UFC 202 is what this thing is all about. Simon, you made the trip over here, of course, to cover this event. You do have a European featherweight champion in Conor McGregor. He is not defending his title, of course. This is the rematch with Nate Diaz. And you mentioned when you first got here that this did not feel like a big fight week. And I'm going to support you in that. But talk about the transformation, because from the beginning of this week, I agree. I mean, this is not a good time for Vegas. You know, I was just doing a radio interview with the fine folks over at SB Nation and was kind of explaining to them, listen, late August, early September in Las Vegas is not a hot spot. Well, it's hot. It is a hot spot.
It's
hot as hell. It's not a tourism hot spot. You know, it's the end of summer, man. You know, the vacations are done. It's hot as hell, so nobody wants to be here anyway. And it's just not a big time for it. And I think you felt that when you first got here, that this did not feel big, but it has transformed. I think it does feel big now.
Absolutely. I mean, we walked into the press conference on Wednesday, and we were talking about it. There was an absence of buzz, and it all felt a bit pedestrian. And I'm used to coming over here for Conor fights. My first Vegas trip was UFC 189 when he beat Chad Mendes in International Fight Week to win the interim title. My next one was 194 when he won the full title.
Massive.
And he starched Aldo. Then he went. I've been to Vegas a few times since then, and there's always that big fight buzz. This week, it felt like there was something missing. Like the fight card is an okay fight card, but it's not stellar.
Right.
And it's a fight card with no world titles on it, which is unusual for a pay per view.
Yeah.
We've seen it once or twice before, but it's still unusual. And we went into that press conference thinking, There's something missing here. Then all hell broke loose. I mean, we were in there. Conor McGregor did his traditional late arrival thing. He turned up about 25, 30 minutes late, as is his wont. He likes to do that. He doesn't wear watches to tell the time.
That's
apparently.
Right. He told us that directly.
Exactly. So he turned up. He turned up late. Dana was, to put it bluntly, pissed.
He was seething. And you could just read it on his face.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, you asked him because you had the first question, and you had to address the elephant in the room, which was the fact that Conor wasn't in the room. And Dana knew that he had to deal with the question, but he was clearly pissed that Conor again had turned up late, or hadn't turned up at that point. So press conference goes on, all very standard at that point.
Thank you.
Nothing much to really speak about.
Thank you. And thank you. Appreciate it.
And at that point, Conor strolls in about 25 minutes, 30 minutes late. I think there's one or two questions get asked to Conor. Next thing we know, Nate's leaving the stage. I believe, and I'm told, via a signal from his brother Nick. He walks across the stands where all the people are watching, and within the space of about 25 seconds, they start off throwing insults at each other.
Right.
And then the insults turned into missiles. Right. And then it started. I think Nick. So Nate threw the first water bottle.
Sure.
And a colleague of ours who I think is going to be on this podcast later, Adam Hill, has got the most incredible video.
Fantastic video.
Of, I think it might have been Chris Avila, who's on this card, who's fighting on this card against Artem Lobov, SBG versus Scrap Pack. So that's the little prelude. But he chucked a water bottle, and it was like it had come out the arm of a Major League Baseball pitcher. It literally whistled past his ear while he was filming on the iPhone. Amazing. But then it went up a notch. Connor then jumps up from his seat. He chucks a couple of bottles and he thinks, what else can I throw? Cans of Monster. These big 500ml cans of Monster that always sit on the dais when you see a press conference in the UFC. He went to grab the one in front of him and actually knocked it off the table. He then ran around, grabbed Glover Teixeira's one. Glover's looking at him going, what are you doing? And Dana was like, don't you dare throw those. He was like, don't throw the cans.
Could hear it in the audio.
Don't throw the cans. Connor has completely lost it. And that is the right terminology. He lost it.
Yep.
And he ran and he hurled these two full cans, unopened cans, into the melee. There were members of the Las Vegas Constabulary there. There were members of the MGM Grand Security staff there.
Constabulary.
Police. Sorry.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Sorry. I'm
translate that.
I'm broadening your vocab for you, Kenny. It's all good. The LAPD. Sorry, LVPD were in attendance.
Bizarre that the LAPD was here, but
well, yeah, they might have been stuck from all the fires.
And
I don't
know. We heard that a Las Vegas Metro officer was actually struck by a can and I don't want to say injured, but it was significant enough that it was reported and passed on to us.
Yeah. If he gets hit, if someone's going to get hit by a can thrown at that sort of ferocity, even a glancing blow is going to leave a mark. So we're very lucky that no one got not seriously hurt. You know, we don't want to over-dramatize this, but someone could have been quite nastily injured.
I had somebody ask me today how that compared to Jones-Cormier when they broke out and had their battle in the MGM lobby. I will say I think Jones-Cormier felt more hectic, maybe just because there was there was so much going on, and maybe because it was a more open-air environment and there were passerbys. It felt more hectic to me. This one didn't feel as hectic, but there was a moment where I did kind of, not panic, but you had that like, oh shit, this could get really bad because there's large crews of people on both sides. And the way that theater is set up with, you know, kind of everything sectioned off with walls and stuff like that, it wouldn't have been easy if security wasn't in the right place to get where they needed to be. And I was like, oh God, this could get bad. And fortunately, the security did a great job, man. And
they really did.
But, you know,
they stifled that pretty quick.
I think if both crews had decided they wanted to brawl, there wouldn't have been much the security wanted to do. I think they knew, you know, we're not trying to turn this into a fist fight right now. We got millions of dollars on the line. But I will say I thought security did a good job in getting everybody out. Cole Coffey, I wanted to ask you because I had a chance to talk to Dana White, and he spoke to me today. It's going to be I put some of it online already in the story, and then some more of it will be in a newspaper article I have coming out on Friday. But he's still pissed off about it. And, you know, in the back of my head, I kind of thought, dude, this you got to be at least a little bit happy. I mean, you know this sold pay-per-views, which you know it sold pay-per-views, just like Jones and Cormier sold pay-per-views, albeit much later. He swears to God, like, listen, we are not in support of this, and there's not one piece of me that is happy about this because of pay-per-view sales. This is bullshit. Mm-hmm. It can't happen. It can never happen. And he even went so far as to tell me that when he got back to the office, he found out that the social media team had put stuff online. The UFC.com people had put stuff on the website. I think the photographer that they had contracted out had taken some pictures and posted online for their partners. I think you, Simon, had seen some of the pictures. And Dana went so far as to say, pull all of that. Make no reference to this happening. Not to hide it. I think it's still like in archive form and that sort of thing, but not to glorify it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the images are there. I mean, they're saved and backed up. But, yeah, they didn't want to have any part out there where it looked like they were condoning those actions. One, he realized that, one, the sport hasn't got past the – they're not in the safe zone. It's still – there's still people that judge it and are constantly looking at it, wondering if it's, you know, human cockfighting. I don't think we've gotten that far away from that whole period. So when they have these moments where the guys just go out and act like thugs and act like – you know, two gangs ready to riot, you know, does no good for the sport. And I think that's what Dana realized as well. When you brought up Cormier and Jones, the thing about that one was that they actually put hands on each other, got a little hectic and got a little crazy because they were actually making contact. You're right. With this one, it didn't have that same sort of feel.
But that's what it was.
But what was crazy about this one is I felt there was more possibility of collateral damage in this one. When the things were getting thrown, you know, there were younger kids around.
It wasn't
there
one
were women around.
It was multiple
things flying a heck of a lot quicker and a lot harder and could do a heck of a lot more damage.
Connor's
I think
got
Dana
an arm
and all
on
that
him.
Stuff. Yeah, and the thing with Connor now too, you know, where he went from one point saying self-defense, chuckle, to now like trying to like, all right, that's my line. I'm going to keep it. You know, he's already setting
defense
up.
That's exactly what he's doing.
He's setting defense up because they're still we're not quite sure something still. Could come out of it. You know, 24 hours has happened, but you don't know if something's already, you know, somebody's already trying to put something in motion and we just haven't heard because it hasn't gotten public.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the Metro is going to say, oh, by the way, somebody has filed a thing. I mean, maybe if we reached out and we could see.
If they wanted to be hard asses, I mean, if a police officer, which is what we told, it was an actual Metro police officer was hit, I think they could probably file like assaulting a police officer.
Well, at least something in problem. Well, yeah, I mean, I wonder. I think you have to prove intent on some of that, and that's why I think he's trying to say, you know, that he was self-defense, and he would probably show that it was collateral sort of damage. Yeah. It was an accident or whatever. But I think it's, you know, maybe by he should probably plead instead, like, by temporary insanity because, you know, there were so many camera angles and views. And who can blame him for losing his cool? I mean, like, he saw friends and loved ones getting shit thrown at him.
Yeah.
So he lost his mind. I mean, I can completely understand it, you know, and it's tough. I mean, we are talking about guys that fight for a living in a locked cage. You know, I'm not expecting them to treat it the same way that some guy that maybe, you know, has never thrown a punch and, you know, probably the last thing in his mind when some push comes to shove is violence. Somebody else would probably go a different route. You know, these guys, push comes to shove, they're not afraid to let hands go or to throw themselves in harm's way. And I think we just saw a culmination of all that kind of quickly shake up and boil. And you know, ultimately we're lucky because it could have put a damper on the sport. You could have had two huge stars right now that, worst case, I mean, if there was some sort of thing, and just imagine if they did hurt somebody, then Metro almost has to act.
They have to
at that point step in. Maybe arrest somebody, and then we're talking loss of the card, loss of whatever. And the guys didn't really think about all that stuff. And in a sense, they got really, really lucky. But I haven't heard either one of them sort of admit that sort of thing, that it was crazy and they got lucky that it didn't do whatever.
Maybe they will after the fact, but they're definitely not.
Maybe.
Simon, I want to ask you because I've had this asked of me a couple of times, and it's different because I know you do online and print. We do a little bit of print. More online is where we live. I've had a lot of people ask me about the tardiness of Conor McGregor. Does it annoy me? Does it bother me? And I've always said, honestly, it really doesn't. Like, whatever. I mean, I'm in for a 14-hour work day anyway. I got stuff to do. Like, whatever. When he shows up, he shows up. When we get the podcast done, we get the podcast done. When we get the content done, we get the – you know, it doesn't matter to me. Now, Cole Coffee, on the other hand, you know, Angry Kenny does come out from time to time.
But I was right today, though. I said Conor was going to be there pretty relatively soon.
And he
we
was.
Spoke about
to
it.
Who he was. He was, like, maybe 5 minutes off.
He showed up to the open workouts, you know, on time. You, first of all, have a much earlier deadline than any of us because you're trying to work on deadline with people back in Europe. You've got print editions that are coming out. What do you feel? Because it's obvious that Dane is pissed. I mean, he said it at the press conference. He told me again today. He's like, Conor has got to start respecting people's time. I think there's some interesting points that you pointed out before, Cole Coffee, is that, you know, not only – I mean, first of all, there's operational issues. You have teams of people who have – behind the scenes in the UFC that have all these detailed schedules and who's where and what, and that throws everything off. I think you've also mentioned before, and it's so true that – you know, if they wanted to do something like a live look in from ESPN SportsCenter or something like that, you know, stuff that can do wonders for their marketing, you know, they can't do it because they don't know if the damn guy is going to show up on time. So those things, I think, are legitimate, real concerns. That theater, the David Copperfield Theater, I mean, David Copperfield has shows at night. Like, they can't just stay there all damn day. They got to turn that venue around or something else. So there's legitimate concerns from the UFC's perspective. But I want to know from a journalist's perspective. I mean, Simon, Does it annoy you? I mean, you've got these deadlines, you've got these print editions. Me, I just put it online whenever I can put it online. Does it annoy you?
It does. I've got to be honest. Because number one, it's about respect. And like, I'm a journalist. If I miss my deadline, you know, obviously, you know, there's potential issues there. But it goes beyond that. It's not really a moan because of my own personal situation and that sort of thing. I just think that this is a sport where it's mixed martial arts, and one of the underpinning values of martial arts is respect. And to not show up on time, like if it happens once, then you say, okay, think, you know, shit happens, right?
Right.
But it's consistent, you know? We knew he wasn't going to. I said to you outside the David Copperfield Theatre, what's the high low on how long, in terms of how long?
We were all taking Connor's bets on how late he was going to be.
I set the line at 20 minutes. And I think he turned up about 25.
Yeah,
so
you were close.
I wasn't too bad.
You were a good line setter.
Today, I think it was about 15 minutes. We were told he was about 40 minutes away, and he arrived in about 20 minutes after that. So he obviously got his skates on at that point. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's he doesn't need to do this. You know, it doesn't enhance his reputation now. Like the first few times, you know, there maybe is a bit of a charm factor about it. Oh, look, it's Connor and all the rest of it.
Right.
But
starting to get old.
Well, also you mentioned about the UFC staff and all the rest of it, and the MGM staff. Normally on a UFC fight week, the UFC have block booked everything. Clearly this week that hasn't been the case.
Right.
We've been moved all over the place. We weren't in Studios A&B, which is the ballroom facility that we normally use as our media room. We've got the weigh-ins tomorrow in an external ballroom at the MGM. We have media day today at the Red Rock, which is about 20-25 minute drive from the Strip. So time is a lot more tight, and I believe that they only had a set window of availability in the theatre. So, you know, Dana was clearly annoyed, and I could understand that. I mean, it's getting tired now. I just think there's no value to it anymore.
There was one part of me that was thinking, Dana has to be up there going, damn it, I have $350 million coming my way. What in the hell am I doing up here dealing with this bullshit right now?
Yeah, and the other thing, and it comes in with everything that happened in the press conference after Connor's late arrival, this is the first major event under the new ownership. And it's a position now where previously, it was Dana and Lorenzo, who were childhood friends, and they could go back, they could get some whiskey and say, well, that was wild,
yeah,
and talk about stuff.
Great point.
Whereas now, Dana is perhaps, he has to now answer for stuff, potentially.
That's right.
You know, the big guys at WME, IMG.
And I'm sure they still
WME,
trust him as the expert, as the guy.
Absolutely.
But like you said, it's not your buddy that you've been working with for 20 years.
Yeah, and the the working relationship, while they'll obviously try and make it as similar as possible, it can't be, because the dynamic is complete. He's dealing with a conglomerate of massive multi-million-dollar companies, as opposed to one of his best mates.
Right.
And there's no way you can replicate that artificially. It just won't work. So, you know, there are going to be these situations where stuff goes wrong, and he might be hauled over the coals on occasion,
mm-hmm.
Which is not something he's probably ever really had to deal with before. So. It's I completely understand why Dana was pissed, and I'm just of the view that Connor's at the point now. I mean, he's at a crossroads right now, and I just think he's got a little bit big for himself, and I think he just needs to wind it in a bit.
I agree with you. I think this is a big moment for him. All right, we're going to keep talking about Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz, of course, as we continue on with the podcast. We're going to have a couple other friends stop by and join us, but I wanted to ask you one thing, Simon. Before you go, the other thing we wrapped up with tonight was the launch of the Professional Fighters Association. Very informative session. I think we spent about 45 minutes fielding questions and answers from Jeff Boris, from Lucas Middlebrook as well, as they kind of laid out their vision. And I got to say, this seems more realistic than the other efforts in the past. Like, I mean, these guys, they've got some weight behind their name.
Yeah.
They've been there. They've done that. And, it's certainly an uphill journey. There's certainly a lot of hurdles to clear along the way. But I will say, I'm impressed by what they're trying to accomplish. If it does get accomplished, I think it is ultimately great for the sport. It's ultimately great for the fighters. But I do want to ask, because you and I talked about it a little bit, and I want to go into a little further. The opening that Jeff Boris came with to basically start out by saying Dana White is not my friend. Now, I don't think that'll be news to anybody that Dana probably doesn't necessarily want to see this happen or necessarily want to deal with these people. But I thought that was kind of weird to kind of go on the attack right away.
Yeah, I mean, what you've got to bear in mind here is if you're a union, your job is to represent your members. And the best way to represent your members is to basically build the best possible relationship with your members' employer. And he basically started off, he thanked people for showing up, and then he said, and here are some people I don't want to thank. And I was thinking, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, I have no qualms with the fact that he and Dana may not have got on, or Dana might not have accepted his invitation, or whatever it may be. But keep that to yourself. You benefit in no way whatsoever from putting that information out there. And he went on and spoke. He was comparing the PFA with the MMAF.
FA.
Or MMAFA, yeah. Excuse me. And he was talking about that, and he was saying, yeah, well, we're being really professional and this and that and the other. That's fine. But you've gone out there, and the first thing he did was pissed off the people that he needs to be negotiating
with. Yeah.
That's not a smart move.
I agree.
Now I think I don't know the guy. I'm aware that he has a history of being successful in terms of player unions in other professional sports. But it seemed to me, as someone who came in really with very limited knowledge of him and the way he does business, it struck me as a bit of an ego trip. And I thought to myself, it can't be about you. It's not about you.
100%.
It needs to be about the fighters and your job. And it's only one job. Obviously they want to get it established, but the job of the union is singular. Represent your members to the best of your ability to get them the best possible working conditions, okay? And if you go in there and piss off the employer, you're on the back foot from day one. It just seemed nonsensical to me.
Yeah, and I don't say this to try and undermine, you know, their efforts. I mean, I think it's fantastic what they're doing.
They said a lot of really good stuff.
Really
and
good
Lucas
things.
Middlebrook is as sharp an operator as you can.
Yeah, we
across.
Should probably say if people don't realize or know who Lucas is. Lucas is the lawyer that if you go back and you look at when Nick Diaz had to do his time in front of the commission.
Right.
He was the one that really took on the commission and
tore them up.
And
he
yeah,
them
just
up.
Sliced and diced them. He was super, super impressive.
100% the best performance we've ever seen in front of the Nevada State Athletic Commission.
Hands down. So they got some power in this group. They got some big players. You know, I mean, it's not like they just got this business guy that's like, hey, I got an idea. Let's start a union. They actually have active people that have really helped establish it or at least are known in those areas or whatever. And then Lucas is fucking, you know, he hands down won me over. After seeing what he did to Lundvall, which actually has been nice to me in the past, I was just amazed and was almost just like, dude, you did what many have tried before but none have succeeded. So, I mean, they got some people, you know, and I feel like, just even calling this so quickly, to make the announcement the other day, now already to have a press conference and have the turnout of media that was there. At first, I thought it was going to be like six of us.
No, it was strong.
I thought that was it. But, I mean, almost every chair was filled.
Yep.
So that's impressive. I mean, that's filled like the ball was rolling. And now you got fighters such as Leslie Smith going out there and pretty much willing and saying that she's willing to kind of help take this and run with it, you know, and be that face, putting their names out there. You know, once people see, and especially already, if I think with fighters, look and see that fighters are already stepping up, it really, really can get the ball rolling. So it's interesting to see. I mean, we'll talk a little bit more, but we actually talked about that with Matt Mitrione when I talked a little bit. He sees it could be 4 months, 6 months, who knows?
Amazing.
You know, once the ball gets rolling.
We'll share that. In the meantime, we've got good pizza on the way. Pizza that didn't even belong to somebody else first.
Excellent, fresh stuff.
So I'm like excited about that.
I know, now you made me feel bad about eating this, even though it actually was kind of cold.
You enjoyed
cold
it,
ricotta
Kenny.
Cheese is not a wonderful
so,
thing.
So as we prepare for that delivery and re-up on our frosty beverages here, should say we of course are having some award-winning
Oh, yes.
Pass-through ribbon.
Oh, yes.
I can see that the young Mike Bond put down his first PBR and
switched
shied
to Blue Moon.
Away.
He got switched fancy. To Blue Moon by the looks of it.
He got fancy. He's more of a craft beer guy. He's can't keep it common like us. But
no, that's why we shouldn't let him back in this fucking country.
Yeah, I don't even know how I got in here to begin with, to be honest with you. It must have been a mistake.
He's obviously not American because he doesn't like the red, white, and blue fine lagers and ales.
All right, well, we set that up and get another round of these frosty beverages. Listen to the first few minutes. Not going to play, of course, the entire conference for you. We will have that available in archive form in case you want to check this out. But I do want you to hear the introduction of Jeff Boris and the Professional Fighters Association. And just judge for yourself. Maybe it's good. Somebody's willing to be that bulldog to take Dana White and the UFC on head-to-head. I tend to be the guy that comes in soft like a feather and try to make things work.
That's the way you come across.
Yeah, Jeff Boris
totally like a feather.
Totally, dude.
Yeah.
Passive-aggressive Morgan. All right, check out Jeff Boris.
First of all, I want to thank everybody for coming. The reporting this last week, since we made the announcement on Thursday that the Professional Fighters Association is now in existence, has just been overwhelming, and I appreciate everything that you guys have done. I think you've shown a lot of class and journalistic integrity, and I hope it perpetuates itself. Now, there's some people I would not like to thank, three in particular. I want to start with Dana White. I want it to be professional, tell him about this press conference. I called him and invited him to it. This was before yesterday's press conference. And one of the reporters asked a question to Dana during the press conference. You know, there's been this movement for unionization, and what do you think about it? And Dana said, I don't know anything about it. Well, that was disingenuous at best, because he knew, because I left him a message saying, I would like you to come to the press conference here today. Next guy would be Patrick Whitesale from Patrick Whitesale and Ari Emanuel. I called Patrick Whitesale and spoke to his assistant. His assistant said, please send me an email regarding the press conference and I'll pass it along. That's all that happened there. Ari Emanuel was a little bit different. I called him the first time. He picked up the phone right away. I said, this is Jeff Boris from the Professional Fighters Association. Do you have a minute to talk to me? And then there was a click, and I wasn't sure if we got cut off or he hung up on me. So I called him back. I said, hi, I don't know if we got cut off or not. This is Jeff Boris again. And he, in a tone that only my wife speaks to me in, says, don't ever call me again. I don't want to speak to you. I don't want to have anything to do with you. I said, okay. And then I sent him a text after, and I said, you know, I think that that's unprofessional. I'll let you get away with that now. But once we become a union and we're certified by the National Labor Relations Board, you're going to have to take my phone call, and you're going to be forced to deal with me. So at the beginning, I thought that my job was going to be really to educate the fighters on all the issues, minimums, pensions, things of that sort, medical benefits, grievance procedure, drug policy. But I'm finding out that I don't need to educate the fighters. And the reason why I don't need to educate the fighters is because they're already educated on the issues. When I talk to them, they know they need these things. They know they need these protections. In fact, a lot of the fighters have educated me. What a lot of them have said to me, for instance, today I was speaking to one fighter, and the fighter said, if we're successful in getting pensions, what about the retired guys? Are they going to get a pension? Are they entitled to it? And I said, I haven't really given it any thought. Well, what's your stance on it? And the fighter told me, yeah, I think that some of them should. And I said, you know what? I said, the union's going to be run by the fighters. And if the executive board of fighters come up and they say, you know what, we vote on this and we think that we want to take care of the retired fighters, and there's money now in the coffers of the union because we're sharing in the licensing or we're sharing in the media revenue, then I would follow their instructions, I would follow their orders. But right now, I find that the biggest problem that I'm having is, and I'm going to use the word bullying and intimidation. You know, a lot of these fighters, they went into these disciplines. You know, they're not barroom brawlers. These guys are mixed martial artists on the highest level. They know how to box, they know how to kick, they know how to fight on the ground, judo, they know all these different disciplines. And a lot of them did it because they were getting bullied at school when they were little kids, and they wanted to defend themselves. In the octagon, they're world class in defending themselves. Outside of the octagon, right now, they're getting bullied, and it's almost embarrassing. And the UFC knows it, they're getting away with it, and I think they're laughing at these fighters. And something has to change, and something has to change now. So all I'm asking to do is to have the fighters empower the group that I've assembled and put together to give us an opportunity to go ahead and teach them how not to be bullied. The same way how they learned not to be bullied at school when they learned judo or kickboxing, and they learned how to box, to give us that opportunity. You know, I was thinking right now when I was on my way over here, if there was a meeting amongst baseball, basketball, football, hockey, UFC, all the top executives, they were all in a boardroom and they were all talking shop. And there's one common theme there in that they all have a union, but the UFC doesn't. And I think the UFC knows that sooner or later, this has to happen. It's inevitable because it can't keep going on like this. So sooner or later, this will come into existence. And I want the fighters not to be afraid, not to be intimidated by the UFC. I want them to empower us and the group that I put together to give us a chance to be able to combat that through collective bargaining.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Jeff Boris putting the gauntlet down with Dana White to get things started with the Professional Fighters Association. All right, happy to welcome in right now the man who is basically, as far as I can tell, maybe Naked City Pizza's number one customer. I mean, you, let's be honest, I mean, you love this place. You do.
I do. I mean, I might be a little biased in the sense that, you know, it's a friend of mine that owns and operates the place and
is the chef.
But, yeah, I recommend it to everybody. I think it's one of those places that, you know, not that many people know about. Obviously, they were on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives that helped them out. But it's like an off-the-beaten-path kind of place, and especially this location. They've got a new one that's a little nicer, but this is kind of grimy, old school. I love coming over here. And the food is just amazing. So I tell everybody to come over here.
I don't know about the bills, though. But
it's something.
It has something to do with it.
Should say, if anybody ever needs like the deep down info on Las Vegas, where to go, what to do, especially at like 4 a.m. or something like that, like Adam Hill is the man, dude. I mean, I'm not going to lie, dude. Your recommendations for Las Vegas are always on point.
Well, it's one of those things, like, there's not that many people that are from here. And I'm not either. I'm not a native. But I've been here long. I mean, I went to high school here. I went to college here.
Oh, she's been here for a while.
I know my way around Las Vegas. I know shortcuts. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of stuff. So, yeah, I over the years, and I'm a late-night guy.
Yeah.
So, I've experienced the city quite a bit, so – from your family locations to your adult-friendly locations, I can help you out.
He has got you taken care of. All right, Adam, I wanted to get you on because obviously this week we're focused mostly on Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor.
They're fighting this week?
Did you not know that?
That's awesome.
Okay, so going to have to fill you in here a little bit. But, yes, UFC 202 Saturday night. No, I had to get you on because the video footage that you posted on your Instagram account, I'm assuming it linked to your Twitter account as well, was, I think, honestly, the best footage I have seen out there from even, like, professional cameras because you were caught in the crossfire. You also got a chance in that video to show off your cat-like reflexes because there was a move where you literally ducked out of the way of, if I'm not mistaken, a projectile fired by Chris Avila.
That is correct. And that was a lot of intense investigation on that. Now, first of all, as far as the video goes, a couple of things. The UFC video is awesome.
It is.
And actually, I saw a couple of videos that are out there that are really good and really well produced. I had the advantage of just being in the middle.
Dude, you were in the battlefield.
So I had the quality is not great, but it is – the action is pretty good. Yeah. I'll admit that. And so – there's a lot of, you know, back and forth. There's bottles whizzing over, and there's one. As you said, if you're watching it, I still think every time I watch it, it's going to hit me. It just it barely misses.
I just watched it. That was intense. You're right. Yeah. And if people want to watch it themselves, they can go to Adam Hill VRJ on Instagram.
Adam Hill LVRJ is 3 L's.
LVRJ.
It's tough. I know it's tricky. I didn't think about that when I made the Twitter handle.
They kind of all blend together.
Adam Hill LVRJ. And also –
you're like T. Woodley with 3 O's.
Yeah, exactly. I have to give credit to Heidi Fang, our videographer over at the RJ, who she put together a video that she shot kind of from the outside with my video from the inside and put two slow motion angles of that bottle flying at me. And it's pretty great. It's pretty great up there. So you get the slow motion bottle just whizzing right by my head. It's pretty awesome. And she did a great job with that. So
that's
pretty interesting. But yeah, it was being right in the middle. And you know, the crazy thing is, in situations like this, you miss everything that's going on because we're all scrambling for cameras. Everybody's looking around. How can I film this? And I think
it was impossible to film unless you had multiple cameras. It was impossible.
Yeah. And it happens in life too. I've noticed, like, you know, instead of experiencing things, it's always like, oh, I gotta get my camera. I was at the implosion the other night. The Riviera got knocked down.
Yeah,
which is like my ninth one. People make fun of me for that. But
wow.
But it was the same thing. Like, They didn't do any fanfare. They didn't do any warning. They just blew the place up at 2:30.
No countdown. Which
I was annoyed at first, but I actually, in retrospect, thought it was really cool in that usually it's just, okay, how can I get the best shot? How can I get the best angle? That night, you almost had to just watch it and remember it. Like, I ended up getting a video, of course, at the end, and I posted it.
So you didn't know that 2:30 was the scheduled time?
No. At first, they said 2, and they're like, well, it's going to be delayed. It'll probably be around 2:30. Mm-hmm. And then they just blew it up at 2:30. And nobody had their cameras out. Nobody had anything. And it was one of those things you have to just experience life. Hey, I was there. It was cool. I remember it. Where's your video? Oh, I didn't have one. I wasn't ready for it. And that was kind of like in the fight, everybody's scrambling around. You know, bottles are flying. Where's my camera? Where's my video? And you don't experience like what's actually going on.
Right.
Like you forget to like, hey, I was there. Like, oh, what's your video like? And everybody's walking around the press conference. Did you get the angle? Did you get the shot? Did you get the angle? And I know that's our job as media. But at the same time, like it's kind of cool when you didn't get it. To just think like, oh, I saw this and I saw this. But then last night I went home and I looked at everyone's video. I saw every angle. That was pretty cool, too, to just to experience like, all right, this guy had this shot. This guy had this shot. And, just it was one of those things. I am the worst at operating a camera. Like, I always get terrible pictures. I can't zoom. I'm awful. But I just happened to be in the right place and kind of got that really cool shot of a bottle just flying by my head. And it happens to be somebody on the card that threw it, which
That's
is
hilarious.
Even crazier. And, you know, it led us to the thing earlier. If somebody would have got hurt in that, and I'll use myself as an example. If that bottle hits me in the head, it's not going to hurt that bad. Let's say it just hits me in the right spot, knocks me out.
Right.
What happens? Like, there's a fighter on the card that potentially knocks somebody out with a bottle. Again, this is completely hypothetical. What do they do? And I think that's why when you heard people say, oh, it was fake, it was staged, to a degree, yeah, you can set up that stuff. You can set up drama. But there is zero chance on God's green earth that somebody from the UFC is like, yeah, start throwing bottles around.
Yeah,
like, do people understand the liability that comes with fans, kids, media people sitting with bottles, full cans of Monster.
I was like, you're joking, right?
Yeah,
like,
and again,
set this up.
And again, could the walkout have been orchestrated? Could the anger, you know, could some of that stuff been orchestrated? Yes, of course. I don't know that it was because I don't know that Nate is the kind of guy that participates in that kind of nonsense.
Right.
But yeah, could the drama have been drummed up and some of that orchestrated? Of course it could. But nobody is telling any – there's no way anybody's allowing an orchestrated thing of bottles flying around a room with fans in it
Absolutely.
Like that. There's no chance that's part of that.
Absolutely right.
You actually, on your footage, because we had talked to Joe Williams, one of the security guys at the UFC, and he had mentioned how one of the house security guys got hurt and got hit in the back. You actually see it. I just saw it on the video. I saw the guy.
Really.
He's the guy with the gray. He's the gray.
The can of Monster that Connor threw. Hit the and I don't know, one of the security guys works for the UFC that's from Europe, and I don't know his name. I don't know him very well.
Yeah,
but you see him whenever European fighters run, you see him, and it hit him right in the back. And the other can from Connor, you also see in my video, hits the wall up above the exit. So that was a good throw by
he's
Connor.
He's got an arm.
All right,
well, I'm glad he threw towards the wall.
That's the other part. That's the other part of this video.
You're gonna put Jake Shields on blast.
Did you see it?
Yeah, dude.
All right, you're watching my video.
In fairness.
His throw was horrific.
In fairness, okay, let's assume that that was a full cup of coffee.
Okay.
And it was like, you know, that styrofoam kind of soft. So you can't a full can of Monster, you can just grab that and chunk it.
Yeah,
that's fine.
So I'm thinking that, like, he had to kind of push it forward a little bit. You know what I mean? He had
so it didn't spray and open
right,
up
because,
on him?
Yeah, if you chunk it, the lid comes off, you spray your boys.
Why are you making excuses? First of all, I'm with you. Because I'm totally with the concept of, an open bottle or like a cup is much harder to throw. It's not going to go anywhere. That's obvious.
Right.
I'm just judging on form. I don't. Again, like I'm a
guy
that I'll watch.
It was more of a shot put. Yeah.
I'll watch guys play basketball, and I'll watch one guy make a shot and the other guy miss. I'm like, yeah, the guy that misses is a better player. I know that because I can tell his form. It's just because the outcome is correct.
Right.
Doesn't mean that he's better.
Right.
You could like, okay, that guy got lucky and made that shot. That guy actually knows what he's doing. You could tell. Shields, I'm not judging on the outcome of the throw. I'm judging on his form is horrific. He didn't move his feet, and his arm just kind of rotated. I guarantee he's never played anything in his life.
And I wonder if he was sort of doubting himself or trying to – his internal voice is like, should I? Should I?
Yeah.
I should probably throw this because they're going to give me grief if I don't,
yeah.
but I
oh,
really
yeah.
don't want to hurt the carpet. You know, there's like
well,
brown liquid in
I'll
here.
Tell you that Chris had none of that doubt in his mind because he fired that bottle.
Did you talk to him about it today?
I did because, you know what, I didn't watch it enough to realize that it was him until after. Like, people were posting, like, freeze frames of the video on my Twitter And I finally figured out, oh, okay, that's who that was. And I should have talked to him about it. And I think if he wins on Saturday, maybe I will. But I also – I think it's going to be one of those things where we all think it's funny. A lot of the time we think that something's funny or fans think it's funny. And then you go to a fight and be like, dude, you almost hit me with that bottle. Like, what are you even talking about? I don't even know who – like, what do you mean? I think a lot of times you get that reaction. So I don't even know if he'll get it or think it's interesting or funny. But, yeah, maybe I'll bring it up to him.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm just glad that we can laugh about it because there were no real injuries. We could be having a total different conversation.
Damon says there was.
There was.
Really?
I think it was the Metro officers.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think we talked a little bit about
injury.
That.
He actually did say, what did you order over there, bro? Is there more meatball stuff?
No. We got the chicken wing dip. Have you had that before? Do this. We can talk amongst ourselves. Go if you want to go grab some of that right now. It might change your life. I'm just saying.
It's a chicken wing dip?
The meatball skillet is great.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, we just had
chicken wing dip. No, I'm saying. I know. I saw that you guys had it. But I'm saying chicken wing dip is – it's not just good.
All right, I'm going to go try this.
Yeah, go
do it. I want to know.
I'll talk for a while.
Dana said, and I'll listen to your answer back on the podcast some other time. Dana said that he totally anticipates both Connor and Nate getting fined, maybe the NSAC coming after their licenses. Of course, after the fight happens, not before the fight happens. I want to know. I mean, you're a longtime Vegas guy. You've watched the commission operate from the beginning. What do you think? I mean, do you think they're going to be facing any type of real punishment here?
Yeah, I do. And for a couple of reasons. First of all, I know that they were embarrassed by what happens. They don't like what happened. And certainly, you know, that's fair. And I think you look at precedent. It's happened several times in boxing.
Yep.
They've punished guys. And you don't have to look much further than the MMA world. Jones and Cormier, they did come down on.
Sure did.
For their press conference. And it's different because they were actually, you know, throwing punches. But this is the same thing. I mean, it's still dangerous.
Yeah, we actually talked about that a little bit as for if the moments felt different. You know, like he felt that the Jones and Cormier had more of a hectic feel to it, maybe because it was more and there were crowds close around. I told him I thought it was a little more crazy and hectic because you actually saw fighters putting their hands on each other. Whereas at least in this one, there was some separation between the two. But for me, this one felt like it had a little bit more risk factor because there was so much other – there were so many other bystanders that were – literally stuff flying around like you literally were inches away from that bottle. It could have been very, very bad for a lot of people.
I think what you're getting at too is that the other one it was more chaotic, more drama because it's two guys that are professional fighters throwing punches at each other, but you knew their intention. They were going after each other. Now in that scrap, Cormier did throw his shoe famously and it hit Heidi Fang, our videographer, in the head in that case, if people remember that. But it was one guy against one guy, and there was other people kind of getting involved, but that's what it was. In this one, it was much more chaotic. It was much more dangerous for the people there. So
yeah.
I do think they're going to come down on them. And remember, they got community service and a fine. I would expect the same thing. There's precedent there, and I think that's what they're going to go with.
Chicken wing. Adam Hill, can you just order food for me from now on?
I'll try.
I may have screwed up and ordered before you got here.
I don't. You're probably you've had food already. I don't know if you're still hungry. The pizza logs.
Oh yeah, we like. We're big fans of the pizza logs.
I do like the pizza logs. Oh. I've had those before.
But the chicken wing dip is of the appetizer.
That's not on the menu, right? That's
yeah, it is.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. It's an appetizer.
Oh, my God,
I love that the model that they have for this the Naked City Pizza. They kind of pair up with like a dive bar.
Yeah.
Then you got the pizza side because they did that at the new location, right?
Well, the new one is it's more. I mean, they've got their machines, the bar, and it's theirs. It's their own.
Oh,
thing.
Okay.
Like, here they kind of rent out the kitchen.
Is that the one on UNLV? Like on
the
campus?
One at UNLV is a little bit more theirs, but they don't have a bar.
Oh, so there's a third one then.
The third one just opened.
Oh, I didn't know there was a third
Pecos.
One.
Naked City Tavern, right?
Tied into MMA. It's right across from One Kicks Gym over on Pecos.
Very cool.
Right in that area. Okay. So and they've got it's their own spot. It's 24 hours and. Again, this guy is a real chef. He's not. He opened a pizza and wings place, but he is a chef, and he added a breakfast menu that is
phenomenal.
It's phenomenal.
And this is the same guy that does the tacos and all the other stuff.
He had the taco place.
Had the taco place.
I mean, we're getting into a lot of stuff. I can talk about this stuff.
Oh, Des Noodle Tacos was bomb.
How great was that place?
Can't believe they had to shut it down, dude. That was amazing.
I don't know. It was a lease issue, but hopefully they'll bring it back. All right, point.
Adam, you I think are fantastic at keeping things real and kind of setting the scene. I've got a story coming out in the paper in the morning where I kind of look at this fight for Conor McGregor. And to me, I honestly feel like this is a big crossroads moment for Conor McGregor, man. I really do. And I talked to Dana about it for my piece, and he's like, dude, you got it wrong. Like, this is just, a stud that fights at any weight. He's doing this. It's great. But to me, everything that we're hearing is that he ain't going back to 145. His coaches, his team has said, like, dude, we don't think he can make it anymore. So to me, if Conor McGregor comes up short on Saturday night, he's on a two-fight losing streak, potentially facing having to give up his belt because he can't make the weight anymore. So he's no longer a UFC champion. He's been beaten twice by Nate Diaz. I'm not saying that it ruins anything he can do for his future, but I feel like this is a huge moment in Conor McGregor's career.
Yeah, I think it certainly is. And you know, he did try to downplay it a little bit today, and I think that maybe was a smart, you know, a smart business move because he was like, this isn't about my legacy. This is just something I'm doing on the side,
right.
Which is – it's smart to get ahead of the story. But again, here's why it's definitely life-changing because we're talking about not going back to career training. He's not going back to 145.
Right.
If he loses, he probably is.
Right.
I mean, I think that's what changed
it.
He's
got to go back and be right, like, well,
because,
I was
because that's the only way you can sell it. And it's I think a lot of times we get caught up in, like, we're following the day-to-day, everything that's going on. And so, you know, we know, oh, he's going to 170 and – he's not really 170, and Nate's not even really 170. Like, all this stuff that we follow every day, like, the average fan does it.
Right.
The average fan, all like, because, and that's what Conor McGregor is. The hardcores are just going to, they're going to be there all the time. No matter what, they're going to buy fights, they're going to check this out. But Conor transcends that, and the average fan asks about, my mom calls me and asks me about Conor McGregor.
Yep.
And so, you know, you have this guy, and all people are going to know is, oh, he lost two straight fights. That's it.
That's it.
And I know that we know all the other parts
of this.
All
the asterisks and stuff that should be on there.
No, the average fan doesn't care about that. All their, oh, he lost twice. I'm not going to watch it.
You're just going to see that clip of Nate Diaz over there saying, Conor got his ass kicked.
But the one thing they have is they can just hard sell, all right, he tried, he's going back to 145. And you can just pound it into the fans. He can go on Conan and say that. He can go on all these, you know, SportsCenter every day and say he's going back to 145 because he tried to go to 170, and those guys are huge. Even though we know it's not true.
Right.
Those guys are huge. You know what? I gave it a risk. I fell short. My bad. And so that's why it is big. If he wins, all these avenues are open. He can fight Alvarez at 155.
Sure.
He can fight, you know, Tyron Woodley if GSP is going on. He can do whatever he wants if he wins because he's right back on track. If he loses, yeah, it is career changing because now he's back to 145 in my opinion.
I think so too.
So I think that's why it is such a massive fight for him.
Let me ask you about another thing. Let's change topics real quick because you're a very smart man and more intelligent than me. So
I pretend.
Professional Fighters Association. We just walked away from the launch press conference of it. We touched briefly on I thought Jeff Boris's, you know, kind of aggressive tone out the shoot, which I thought was a little surprising.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are heavy hitters. They're wanting to make some waves. After we sat there, we had a good 45 minutes of Q&A. There was some good discussion in there, some exciting stuff, some unique opportunities. But give me your take on this. How realistic is this happening, and what kind of hurdles do you see?
Well, the hurdle is I don't think they have any idea what they're getting into trying to take on the UFC as far as forming it goes. I don't think they have any idea. And Jeff Boris kind of hinted at it today and said, I was kind of surprised that, you know, I got hung up on, and they were. I was like, you were surprised? Like, bro, just wait.
That's
just wait.
That's Zuffa 101.
And here's the thing that – because, believe me, I'm a union guy. I'm a union in a lot of cases, and I'm – you know, I support them all the way. And I would I think this would be phenomenal. I am all aboard. If this is what they want to do, I think it's a great idea, and I think it's really beneficial to the fighters. I'm all in. But I just don't think they know what they're in for. And I think that the repercussions that are going to come against people that speak out are going to be swift and severe. And the problem, because I was talking to Jeff about this after the press conference today, and I said, are you ready for exactly what they're going to bring? Oh, yeah, we understand that now. You know, we see how strong it's going to be. And I said, what's going to happen when they're going to find out? It's anonymous right now.
Right.
For right now, it's going to be anonymous. Right. They're going to fill out these cards, and nobody's supposed to know. People are going to find out. People are going to talk. People are going to know what's going on. And when the first two or three people get disciplined, get cut mysteriously, get messed with in some way, all of a sudden people are going to look around and be like, man, I'm not going to risk this.
Yeah.
I know they're saying it's anonymous. I'm not going to be the one to mess with this. I'm not going to go. So it is going to be – it's going to be a really, really uphill battle. And, you know, when they do the vote – and this is the other thing that I was kind of surprised by when I talked to him. And that – so, here, you know, I know – I'm sure you guys laid it out already, but 30% – if 30% of the fighters sign these anonymous cards –
we didn't lay it out, so you can lay it out because, again, you're far more educated than me. So.
All right. So 30% of the potential membership, which if you estimate at 600, that'd be 180 fighters, but they're going to have to go above that number because some of them are going to get challenged, thrown out, whatever. So say 200. Say they get 200 fighters to anonymously sign. It's basically just a signature and a date. That's right. All it has to be. Anonymous, they collect these 200.
Seems
simple
enough.
They send it to the NLRB, and then NLRB gets behind it, and they set up a vote. And so at that point, all they would need is 50% plus one. So,
and that vote is also anonymous?
Yeah.
Okay.
It would be. But again, people are going to talk. It's going to be tricky. But so at that point, it's 301. So 301 of the 600, if we're using 600 as the baseline, would have to vote yes to certify the union. And at that point, then it's – the NLRB is completely behind them then. And then the UFC is in a predicament. They're going to have to go to court. They're going to have to sue to try to stop. There's a lot of avenues they can pursue to try to stop it. But at that point, the union is probably coming.
Right.
But here's the rub. And Jeff Warren's kind of laid this out. He said, listen, if we take that vote and it's 325, even though they're certified, at that point, I think him and his cohorts are like, we're out. They want – when this actually comes up for certification, they're going to want like 95%.
And is
or
that
more.
Just because it'll make things easier for them? Is that why?
Easier. And as he said, and I kind of agree with him, at that point, if you get to a vote and you're that close and only about 55% of the fighters, even though they only need 50, if it's at 55, you're looking around like, all right, guys, we did all this for you. We got you this close. And if you don't want to do it, fine. Fine. We're not going to do it. Because at that point, it should be pretty close to unanimous.
Right.
There's not – I know there's guys at the top that might be affected negatively by a union, but really it's not going to be negatively affected that much.
Right.
It'll be – all right, if you make – the guys that are making like $5 million a fight, maybe you're making 4.8, but you're getting insurance and you're getting
right.
a lot for other guys. And then the people that are making 10 and 10, they're going to collectively bargain up to 25 as a minimum. It's going to help – it's going to help the bottom 80% much more than the top 20.
Sure.
No question about that. So those guys might not be in. So that might be a challenge. But there's so many steps to take. But if you get that close to where you're voting for certification of a union and you only get like 55%, I think you look around and you're like, all right, we're not as close as we thought we were. And I think they'd be out. So if they get there, which is, it shouldn't take that long to get their 200 or so signatures, and they take a vote, which could happen. People are saying, oh, this is like a 5-6 year process. No, it should happen in a year. And if you get to a vote and it's not overwhelmingly passed, then I think that it would kind of die off. And that's certainly what the UFC would hope for. They want no part of it. They want no part of this. And the big thing also, WMEIMG just bought this company for $4 billion or a little more, depending on, what the final closing price is and what we find out. But they did that because of where the contracts are with the fighters. They looked around and they said, wait, there's this much revenue. There's a TV deal coming up in 2018. There's Fight Pass, which could be a huge potential revenue stream for them because that's the way everything's trending. People are
right.
getting rid of cable, Netflix type services like a Fight Pass. That's the future. They're like, you've got this set up, which is a great system already. You've got all these fights in your library. You've got live capabilities, and we've got this TV rights deal coming up. There's so much money coming in, and we're paying the fighters how little? This is great. That's why they paid so much. And now, if you're like, oh wait, you're unionizing, and now we're going from paying the number that's thrown out is 15. Most of the stuff I hear is closer to 24%, maybe.
Okay, yeah. I always thought 15 was low.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm here – you never know. Because we don't – nobody really knows what people are making. It's a mystery. And that's why I don't like to talk about money that much because
– we don't know.
You don't know.
There's no way to substantiate it.
You don't know. And whatever a fighter tells you, whatever an agent tells you, whatever the UFC – you have no idea. So I don't like to talk about it that much, even though people think it's interesting and they're fascinated. I'm like, yeah, but it's not true.
Right.
So when you're like, oh, this guy got a $1 million payout. No, he probably got three.
Yeah.
Like, you have no idea. So I don't like to talk about money that much, but I do hear it's probably closer to 24. It's still nowhere close to enough. But, you just buy this company for $4 billion, and they're like, wait a minute. Now they're going to go from, like, 24 perhaps to, like, they're going to want 47? Like, no. Why did we buy this?
Yeah. Ugh.
So I think that could be an issue. And, they announced this last Thursday, but this has been bubbling for a while. And – is it possible that Lorenzo looked around and said, hey, this is on the horizon. I don't want this fight. I can get $4 billion now.
I'm out.
Is it possible it had a role? Yeah, maybe.
I think so.
Maybe.
I think
it's,
so.
And so, I think that, WMEIMG is looking at this like, oh, man, what did we just get into? And I think it would be great, but they're gonna fight it. And bravo to the fighters that are brave enough to step up and talk about it. I wouldn't have that kind of bravery. I'd have no courage as far as that goes.
Just keeping it real.
I'd be like, you knew what? I'd be Dana. I didn't hear anything about a union. What are you talking about? Yeah, that's what I would be. I wouldn't be one of those ones that stepped up, even as much as I support it, and as much as I would want it if I was a fighter. No, I'd be terrified because there's going to be, technically you can't take action against somebody who's speaking up for a union.
Try proving that that's
exactly
the reason. Try proving it.
Exactly. And it's like
people get cut all the time. Fights don't get made all the time.
We didn't cut him because of the union. We cut him because he lost three fights ago.
Yeah.
Like, what?
What?
But yeah, that's
he's on a three-fight win
streak. It's impossible to prove. So, and then once you get two or three, once they get two or three that they punish for for speaking out or trying to be a part of this movement, everybody else is going to look around and be terrified. So it's going to be a really, really uphill battle. But I like that they're at least trying.
I do. It's going to be interesting to track moving forward. It's definitely a big storyline in mixed martial arts and the UFC. I guess specifically just the UFC for now. But, Kolkoff, you had a chance to speak to a Bellator fighter, Matt Mitrione, who attended tonight, participated as well, asked a couple of questions.
Sure did.
I see that Adam Hill's food is getting delivered, so I don't want to keep him too long. And I also just want to go see what the hell he ordered because he's also doing pretty good at ordering it. But Matt Mitrione, set it up. What did you think talking to him?
It was good. I was interested. I actually didn't see him come in the room, and I saw Leslie come in the room, so I knew that there was a fighter there. But to see him come in there and still have a real vested interest, because right now everybody heard that they were only targeting UFC. So I thought it was interesting. I wanted to ask him, pretty much what his thoughts were. Is this a good thing for the sport? Is this something that you thought was maybe on the horizon? How long till he, thinks that something like this could possibly happen? And I thought he had some good answers. And, he was definitely, the Matt Mitrione that we normally see. So, take a listen and see what you think about Matt Mitrione.
How are you, by the way?
Well,
it's good to see you, brother.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, we're here with Matt Mitrione. All right, Matt, we're here. We just watched the Professional Fighters Association talking about the importance of why a union should happen and whatnot. You being in a particular position to understand the need for this, tell me why something like this is important, or is this a step in the right direction? Does it have a lot of work to do, or does it have a lot of explaining to do? Kind of tell me your thoughts initially when you're out here and you hear them put this press conference together and start talking about this. What are your thoughts about this?
I think there's a lot of work to do. I think there's a lot of uncertainty. I think there's a lot of things that we're wary about, we as in fighters are. And I think that the fact that we have gotten to a point where this is a sexy conversation is a great thing. And it's a huge step in the right direction for us as a group, as a group of athletes. And, it's just more, it's a tough road to hoe. And I think they need to, I don't know if they have it or not yet. I haven't thought enough about it. But I think they need to establish credibility and concern and sincerity. Because I know if the fighters don't get a sincere feel, like they feel like this dude, I didn't even know shit about us, kind of a feel, they won't go with it. And they'll be like, they'd rather continue to get fucked than do something else. And I think that's one of the dangerous things about this.
Right.
Like if it feels like a cash grab, not even now, in the future, because the sincerity isn't right, it's not going to work.
Right, because I think it's one thing, when you look at these guys, you got a lawyer coming in here, you got a guy that helps represent other unions and whatnot. And that's kind of one of the things when I was wondering, I was asking about how they make their money, You guys, I'm sure you guys are, one, it's happy that somebody's trying to, negotiate bigger money for everybody or whatever. But you guys got to also wonder, what's in it for them? Are they doing this out of the bigness of their heart? They just want to take care?
Right.
I mean, so I can see where, the sincerity or something like that. What do you think it's going to take for them to finally get to really, get that from the fighters? What do you think they need to do?
I don't know. Maybe everybody's fed up to the point where they don't really care about that. Maybe the time is right. Like the UFC says, the time is now, right? Maybe it is.
And what are your thoughts on the fact that right now they're just mainly targeting UFC fighters? You were in the UFC right now. I mean, is that?
I don't care.
Are you so happy that it's
the greater good,
in the right direction?
Better for the sport. I don't care. I chose to leave the UFC. I chose to take what I see greener pastures, and I'm happy with what I did. I have no kind of side thoughts about it. And if the UFC gets unionized, but I do feel like that's a misstep on their part by not immediately saying, hey, look, you have this many fights in, we're fighting for this, we're fighting for pension or whatever else, time served, we're fighting for that from the jump. Because those are the people that have the influence over the younger people. Yeah. And if you're not going to give credit for the 15, 20, 22, 10 fights that you already got in,
yeah.
Why am I going to be like, well, fuck it, I'm not going to get time served. So, yeah. Hey, kids, do what you got to do, man. You know, like if I'm only going to get credit for two fights that I'm going to have before I retire, cool, sweet.
Yeah.
I put in 17, but I get two more for this. Awesome. I think that's a misstep, but whatever.
So if you had to look in the crystal ball, how soon do you think something like this will come to actually fruition? If this does keep moving forward, if you could predict and you think what it takes to put all the ducks in a row, how soon do you think something like this actually could get off the ground?
Well, you know, the fact that Lucas was saying that email-wise, electronically, they can do all this stuff, I think worldwide. I mean, I don't think it's unrealistic to say within, you know, 4 to 6 months, we could be in a completely different conversation. And I hope that's the case. I really do. And I think a lot of people have gotten dicked over enough that they're tired of taking it.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Meathead Matt Mitrione. Being not quite such a meathead as he weighs in on the potential future of mixed martial arts and a potential fighters union. Cool to see Matt Mitrione there, even though, you know, he's a Bellator fighter.
Yeah.
He realizes that this is a UFC
it's bigger than him
union.
Or one organization.
It is. I like that. All right, the voice you hear there, of course, is the young Mike Bond. He has made his way down from the Great White North. He is drinking his craft beer over there, shunning us commoners with our PBR. Let's talk about it, Mike. This thing has been all about Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor. There's some fun fights on the card, and anybody listening to the show is a hardcore. They're probably down. I mean, they're looking forward to Larkin and Magny. They're looking forward to Garbrandt and Mizugaki. I mean, those are great.
Donald Cerrone, the last fight of his contract.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Yep, he's a free agent.
Show me the money. He's heading to Bellator. No, come on, that ain't gonna happen. All right, let's talk about it, though. I want to get your opinion on Nate Diaz. You know, it's funny because we saw this fight play out the first time, and Nate Diaz, of course, was victorious. Now, it's funny because we're watching these countdown shows, and you see it, you know, when he's sitting up there at the desk at Fox, like, his face is beat up, man. He took a lot of shots from Conor McGregor, right? And we've talked to multiple fighters over the course of the past few weeks, getting our picks in for who you got, you know, putting that video together, and I couldn't find a single damn person to say they were picking Conor McGregor. And there is some logic behind the fact that, look, we just saw this fight play out, and it happened on 10 days' notice. So what's going to happen now that Nate has a full camp? But I wonder, like, I mean, Nate's got his share of losses, too. It's not like he's never been beat before.
Double-digit losses.
So I don't know, man. It's weird to me. I mean, it seems like literally everybody is picking Nate Diaz in this fight, and it's like it's almost at this point like people are saying there's no way Nate can even lose. I don't know. Give me your take on it.
No, I don't agree with that. Of course, he can definitely lose the fight. Conor said today at the open workout, you know, Nate's fans think that he can't be knocked out. He can be knocked out. Of course, anyone can be knocked out. Conor could drop him with the first shot. Like, who knows? Conor McGregor is a knockout artist. He has plenty of knockouts. He has plenty of power. He can stop, you know, pretty much anyone he gets in the cage with. So to say, you know, he can't do that is completely, I think, a miscalculation of the fight. But I think just seeing the way it played out, my opinion kind of it is, and I said today on when we were shooting our staff predictions for the video that we put out with our...
Was that today? That seems like so long
ago. Yeah, right? That was...
It was. That was a hell of a long time ago.
I know. It was crazy. And I kind of said... The reason I'm picking Nate in this fight is I just think Conor's style is so high energy, so high output, and he does these moves which keeps his style unpredictable, the spinning kicks, just these high output techniques that I think that's what was getting him to that point, winning that fight in the first round, what busted Nate's face up, all that kind of stuff. But I think Conor now, he might be overthinking it in the sense that he's going to come in, I could see him maybe, he's going to try to pick him apart, do something that we've seen, you know, the Rafael Dos Anjos's of the world due to Nate Diaz in that fight. But I think him doing that just plays way more into Nate's style, because if he's not throwing those crazy kicks, not doing those high energy moves, that's turning it more into a boxing fight, which I think favors Nate even more. You don't want to stand, you want to mix it up, you want to show different looks, different techniques, and throw him off his game. If you let Nate get into his rhythm boxing, fighting the way that we've seen him thrive so many times, that's clearly his fight. So I'm curious to see what Conor's strategy really is in this fight.
it's
and
funny
that's
because
what makes it so curious to me.
It's funny because I picked Conor McGregor, and when the fight was announced, I'm like Nate Diaz all day. But you know, I was really impressed at that famous post fight press conference where he came in and kept it real and was like, was not efficient with my energy, you know, overexerted, and that's exactly what we saw. I mean, just loading up on left hands, like, dude, stop! You're not going to knock out Nate Diaz. You're a featherweight, and so I was like, I really honestly believe, you know, and then John Kavanaugh did an interview where I think he said, like, you know, I see us maybe getting a win in the fourth round, which made me think, okay, they're thinking about long term. They're thinking about this is a 25-minute fight because, yeah, to me, I feel like if Conor can manage the energy, if he can do what he did in that first round, he can cause problems for Nate Diaz. But now, this week, he's gone back to saying I'm going to knock him out in the second round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that scares me a little bit.
Yeah, which is super interesting because Conor's never even seen a fourth round his entire career. Nate Diaz has fought a couple five-round fights. Of course, you know, a few of them didn't go his way. I think he submitted Jim Miller in the fourth round of that fight they had. You know, he, of course, lost the five-round decision to Benson Henderson for their title fight when they had that one. But generally speaking, Nate Diaz gets better as the fight goes on. It's something, you know, Nick Diaz as well, that's a trait they have. And we don't know. There's huge question marks there. The only time we've seen Conor go three rounds, I think even his entire career, was that fight against Max Holloway where he blew out his knee and he kind of had to adjust and fight a fight where he wasn't able to, you know, he got the takedowns, he was working some ground game in that one, and I think that was just a product of him being injured and having to just make it to the final bell. But I don't know what Conor McGregor looks like in a fourth round, a fifth round, and we know Nate Diaz is right there. He'll be just as his cardio will be just as good in the fifth as it was in the first. So that's what makes it interesting to me. Like you said, John Kavanaugh saying fourth round, but yeah, Conor, it just makes me wonder if Nate is in his head, the fact that he's going in there and he's saying, I'm going to put this guy away early. What's going to happen if Conor could come in? He could have this perfect game plan, but we've seen with the Diaz brothers so many times, once they get in there, they hit you a couple times, they throw you the middle fingers, they talk some shit to you, they throw you off your game, and they make you want to just knock them out and throw all your energy into it and do all these, you know, try to finish the fight, and that works to their advantage way more often than not. So that's, I'm just so curious to see how this fight plays out. Yeah, it's exciting.
Cold Coffee, I think pretty soon we might be seeing your name on the staff picks grid, because if I can make the announcement,
let's do it, why not?
First of all, you are no longer a contracted employee. You are now a full-time staff member of MMA Junkie and USA Today Sports.
As soon as I go back and put that paperwork, it was crazy because, like you said, like, media day feels like it was yesterday because we started this day a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it was right around that time, yeah, when I got the email and the offer of full-time employment with Gannett and USA Today Sports, and I'm above and over the moon with
and
it.
And I'm pretty sure what drove that offer was our bosses at USA Today Sports probably logged into your Twitter account and saw that you are verified. You got the blue check next to your name now. And they're
the
like,
that's
they're
what
like,
I thought
oh,
you were going to talk
shit.
About was the blue check.
Like, he's got the blue check next to his name. We better lock this dude up.
We better
quick.
Do it because he's big time now. He's big time now.
I think I'm the only person on our staff that doesn't have the blue check.
Who is?
So
you are?
Yeah, because I'm waiting. I'm trying to get the actual just at Mike Bond Twitter handle. Instead of just Mike Bond MMA, and it's never been used. I put in a request today.
It's never been used? So somebody owns the account, it's never even tweeted?
It was started in 2009. It has one follower and one following. They're both Hootsuite. Zero tweets ever. And, yeah, it's very frustrating. Hey. I go to that every day just to, like, see if they've vacated it.
You
so
could go my route. That just put your whole name with your middle initial, your address.
I could. But, you know, not to hate on MMA, of course. MMA is the first and foremost. But I, of course, cover some other sports for USA Today. I do the NBA. And all that stuff, so I feel like, you know.
Oh, big time. This guy just big time.
I'm not trying to big time you, but, you know.
Well, dude, he does. I mean, he's got like 50 times my followers on Facebook, but I have gotten like maybe 3 or 4 followers.
He was rolling with Dwight Howard today. You see? He was hey, my boy.
I think Dwight called him out by name.
D's over there. My boy D's over there.
Yeah, he was like, hey, Mike, like the tie. Like the tie. Come on over.
Those NBA guys, they do have a very good relationship with USA Today Sports. I can give a shout-out to one of our top NBA reporters, Sam Amick. He was the one who broke the Dwight Howard going from Houston to Atlanta story.
Nice.
So I think, you know, I don't really know as well because, of course, I'm in Canada. But
right.
I think down there, especially the American players, guys who have grown up in the States, USA Today, I think, is a very, you know, big name for them
for
in the
sure.
basketball world.
For sure. Let me peel back the curtain a little bit, by the way. We've got some great videos coming out. Mike Bond was handling the interviews on site today. I was doing some editing, of course. Cold Coffee was doing the shooting as he normally does. But if you like the tie, if you ever see Mike Bond wearing a tie and you like it, know that I actually tied it for him.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing. I'm 25 years old, and I don't know how to tie a tie.
I'm 38 so years old and wouldn't wear a tie if you fucking made
my,
me.
My dad
but
tried
I still
to teach
know
me how to tie a tie once, and unfortunately I was pretty drunk, so I don't really remember what he taught me.
Good stuff, good stuff. All right, Cole Coffey, I did want to ask you, seeing Nate Diaz become the star now, because it's crazy. I mean, this dude is like – you know, we always talk about who's the biggest stars because those are people that we have to focus the most coverage on. That's what our, you know, we're a business, all right? As much as we're covering the sport, we also have to generate clicks. We also have to generate views.
But we try to do it in a realistic
try
way.
To do
we're,
it
not, we're not putting out stories saying, you know, with Instagram pictures of Raquel Pennington and Tisha Torres saying, is this the UFC's hottest new couple?
Oh, my God. Somebody did that?
Oh, yeah. And I don't want to, you know, put it right, on blast, no. But we know the sites out there, the ones that certain fighters have sold their Twitter accounts to. You know, if you follow MMA Twitter even closely, you know exactly who I'm talking
Mike
about.
Mike Bond throwing shade. You get a couple craft beers in him, and this stuff just starts to come out. Cole Coffey, seeing Nate Diaz become the star, I mean, you worked with him behind the scenes when you were still working with the UFC. What do you think, man, when you see the guy out there? I mean, is this the guy finally that we're seeing in public? Is this the guy that was that you saw behind the scenes? Do you feel like people still aren't seeing the real Nate Diaz or not getting it all? I mean, what is that? And can you take time from not getting your Pokemon over there?
No, this is Family Guy.
Oh, okay. he's a Poke Hunter.
Funny thing about Pokemon, I'm looking to move into a new apartment in Toronto, and I was looking at some listings.
You got a Poke spot?
Legit, on one of the listings, it said, you know, two bedrooms, amenities, this and that, and it said, great location for Pokemon hunting. You can catch rare Pokemon right outside the building. This was on an apartment listing, and I was like, are you kidding me?
What world am I living in?
This is like, you know, they bumped the price up $100 on Red. We got a Pokemon location.
Oh, my God.
No, so, you know, it's funny you bring up the Diaz thing. No, I mean, like, I think we're seeing the evolution of Nate because, you know, before he was always – so reserved and just like, you know, I think he's still really, really in the shadow of his brother and he takes a lot of cues from his brother. I think we saw that when it came time to leave the press conference and whatever.
Yep.
I think before he would almost never really say anything until he kind of got the verbal cue or check from his brother. Now we see a guy that's been standing out on his own and he's, I don't want to say blossom because he's a grown-ass man or whatever, and it sounds
so
weird.
So proud of you, buddy.
You've become a young, beautiful boy. He has really, really bloomed. Now I'm stuck on the fucking flower metaphors. But, I never saw it like this. Like, he constantly amazed me now because it's like a total different person. I mean, one, like the brothers wouldn't show up on time or do anything.
Right.
He's showing up on time. He's doing all the things that needs to do to be that guy. You know, even as much as he is sort of the anti-hero for the company because as much as he wants to shun and do his own thing, he's doing all the right things that they ask him. And so now I think he's starting to get that push that before that he always felt like he was never getting. And so he, in turn, kind of just never wanted to do what the UFC said. Now I think he's starting to realize that, hey, if he plays the game a little bit, he could still kind of do it his way. And now he's getting, you know, more people are just gravitating toward it. I mean, he's got one of those personalities that, and I think it's the way he fights and the way he stands behind what he says that it's hard to not really just like a guy that kind of stands for what he says and then goes out there and proves it and does it and stuff. So right now, I mean, he's definitely shaping himself to be one of those guys that when people look and they think about UFC fighters and who are guys that are representing the company at the very top, the needle movers, mm-hmm. he by far is probably in the top five of the needle movers of the company
now.
And it's amazing.
He doesn't move the needle, though, according to Dana.
Dana obviously didn't know that that there was a Fighters Association.
Yeah, right.
Well.
No, and you know, kind of to go from your point, I think even when you've heard Dana say, like he's talked about, he would say it with Nick, you know, if he could only play the game this a little bit. I think Nate, but he's always had really good things to say about Nate. He's like his brother, on the other hand, is pretty good at that stuff. Of course, Nate has had his moments with the UFC, but more often than not, I think he's being
He plays the game.
Professional enough, yes. He's not. He hasn't had these huge instances. He hasn't had, you know, of course, there's the infamous George St. Pierre, Nick Diaz conference for, I think it was UFC 137 or something, where Nick didn't show up, and it was, you know, a similar image of, you know, what we saw
an empty chair.
An empty chair, yeah, that we've seen. But
Dana getting the phone call from Cesar Gracie in the middle of the press conference, that was fantastic.
Yeah, it was crazy. But to, you know, talk about Nate's star power, I actually had the chance. I put out a piece for Rolling Stone earlier this week, and it was from back from UFC 200 when I got the chance to spend like a few hours with Nate during that week, and more or less it was to really just see what his star power is like in the sport. We just hung out in the MGM lobby at the Starbucks there, and it was basically me sitting there for about an hour just watching how people reacted to him.
Right.
And the difference of people who came up to him, there was, you know, like moms with their young kids, there was an like elderly Asian couple, and everything in between, every race, every gender, like everything.
Right.
And it was just, it was absolutely compelling to see, you know, how big of a star he was and just how people reacted to him. And of course, we're in a place, it was UFC Fight Week, all that stuff. But even outside of that, I spoke to Clarissa Thompson, who infamously did that one interview with Jon Jones after his incident for Fox Sports 1. Mm-hmm. But now she's the host of Extra TV, which Nate did that very popular interview with, where he said he would slap Justin Bieber with after his first win over Connor. And that's still the highest viewed video they've ever posted on their YouTube.
Of,
they have, you know, other celebrities going on there. And I got the chance to speak with her for that story as well. And she said it was the biggest crowd they've ever had for their, because they do like an outside kind of studio type thing. And yeah, she said she was just, you know, kind of one of the biggest stars she's ever really seen do that situation. So I think he's definitely, you know, as you said, a needle mover, a guy that I think his popularity is more than just the MMA bubble at this point. He is a known commodity in the grander sports world.
So we've talked about what's on the line for Conor McGregor in this fight, but what do you think's on the line for Nate Diaz? Like, if I mean, because I mean, seemingly he's kind of in this fight with nothing to lose. I think, I mean, if he loses the fight,
sure,
it's like whatever, dude. You got two big paychecks in a row,
and he'd probably get another one,
and you'll probably get the trilogy fight. I mean, there's no way in hell he's going to throw the fight. Like, people are like, oh, maybe he'll lose on purpose.
That blows my mind.
No, Nate Diaz is not going to do that. But
no.
I mean, let's talk about a win or a loss.
Well,
I mean, what
would
was,
he?
Well, I don't think so.
Conspiracy theory guy over there. But with a win, I mean, what do you think? Because he's not a welterweight. I mean, I know he's competed at welterweight, but I think it's I think lightweight is his best
3-2 in the UFC at welterweight.
Yeah. I mean, people are saying, well, you know, maybe you give him a title shot. I don't know
he
that,
didn't
like,
seem all that interesting.
I don't
he
think
got
he
asked
cares.
About title shots. He's like, Tyron Woodley and Eddie Alvarez, they aren't big enough to fight me at this point. But, like, where do you go? There's no maybe, like, he said multiple times he doesn't want to fight GSP. He said that's his brother's fight,
right.
Very, very strongly. He doesn't want that fight. Like, who's out there for him? It's very weird. Like, Conor McGregor is arguably the biggest star in the sport.
Right.
He ain't fighting Ronda Rousey next. Like, so who's on that level?
Oh, who knows? Yeah. But, start it up now. Who would win?
Yeah, but, like, who's on that level? So where does he go from here? Maybe this is Nate Diaz. He cashes out. Maybe he's done after this. Maybe we don't see this guy again. Or maybe he leaves for a year and waits for someone's notoriety to build up to this.
Good.
I really don't know.
I mean, that's the great thing about Nick, you know, is that, like, it doesn't matter. And I think Nate is there now, too. It really doesn't matter if they're coming off a win or a loss. It's just, like,
no.
Just put them in a fight. And they're going to make you care about the fight, man. They're going to make you care about
but
the fight.
But I personally think he can say whatever he wants about the Eddie Alvarez title shot. I think he wants to fight Eddie Alvarez. I know I've spoken to him. I didn't include him in the article because it wasn't really relevant to what I was talking about. But he had said, you know, they had an incident at UFC 188 after Eddie Alvarez beat Gilbert Melendez, who is, of course, a teammate of Nate Diaz. I think he definitely wants that fight at some point. I think that makes sense for him. And, you know, who doesn't want the title? He, I'm sure, wants to be champion. He already fought for that belt once. He can say whatever he wants, but a title fight is a big deal for Nate Diaz. And Eddie Alvarez, I think, that would be a hell of a fight to watch between those two. That would be absolutely amazing. So he can say what he wants now, but I think if the opportunity came along and he wins this fight and they offered him a title shot against Eddie Alvarez, he's not going to take it, really, because he's not
he's
a big enough name. Of course he is.
Of course
he
do.
And he's the even though he would be the champion, he would still be the A side of that fight. So he, you know, his star power would carry that fight.
All right, you're the numbers guy. You're the stats guy. Kimmy, when you were putting the facts together for this, give me something that stood out in your head. You know, even if it's one guy, both guys, whatever. Were there any numbers that you came across that you were like, damn, I didn't realize that?
It's hard to say. I mean, I always look at the rematches. You know, Nate's, of course, just had one rematch. He fought Graham Maynard. He beat him very dominantly the second time out. Connor's never had a rematch, and that's always what's compelling to me.
It's interesting.
Going in there and seeing how the rematch is. And, you know, to go back to an earlier point, kind of going off your question, but talking about, you know, a trilogy down the line, if Connor wins this fight, I think Connor McGregor's biggest mistake in the lead up to this fight was saying that there's going to be a trilogy. And that, you know, when I win, if I was him, I would have said, I'm going to beat Nate Diaz's ass so badly, this guy's never going to want to fight me again.
He did sort of address that the other day when he's like, you know, he's got, there's some things he needs to take care of, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think he already started addressing the fact that.
Yeah, no, he has other business to handle because I think the UFC is going to want him to go down. But who knows? I mean, there's a lot of ways another fight can set up between those two. Maybe it's at 155. Maybe Nate beats Eddie. And Connor defends his title a few times, and they meet again at 155 for the belt.
Who knows?
Nate holds it. Like, there's a lot of different things that could go on here. But, yeah, in terms of the numbers, I mean, there's some things on the line. If Connor or if Nate wins this fight by submission, he'll tie Hoist Gracie for the most submissions ever in UFC history. Right there, he holds the modern record. We discussed this a little bit when we were when you were editing my piece, but. You know, Hoist is a little bit different because he got like four submissions in one night or something like that. But Nate's kind of
how
done
amazing
it.
Would that be though to pass Hoist Gracie?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
To tie at least, and then maybe you buy him. So they like.
Yeah, and actually another one that's interesting to me: if Connor gets a bonus here, whether it's fight of the night, anything, he would be the first fighter in UFC history to get seven straight bonuses in seven straight fights. There's a few guys, four people, I believe it's Ronda Rousey, Nate Diaz. Conor McGregor, and I'm blanking on the other person who did it, who have got six in a row, and he would be the first to get seven. And I think that's pretty close to a lock. I think that's probably going to be fight of the night regardless of how it goes.
Right.
So that's something Conor could definitely lock up.
I mean, there are, like, you know, again, we have been focusing, and rightly so, I think this is the fight, so that's why we basically spent the whole episode talking about this fight. But, I mean, just quickly, Rumble and Glover Teixeira could be just incredible. You know what I mean? Yep. I don't think it lasts long, especially if those guys are on that guy. Cowboy and Rick Story, I think that could be a really fun fight. Garbrandt and Mizugaki could be a lot of fun. The Larkin and Magny that we mentioned earlier could be a lot of fun. I mean, there are some opportunities for some fun fights.
And an interesting one on there I think no one's really talking about is Lim and Perry. Both those guys I don't think know how to defend strikes.
Nope.
And one of them is going to get clocked. And you know, talk about a guy like Mike Perry, and there's a few other debuting fighters on the card. And that's, if we're talking about stats, one thing that I've been tracking a lot this year, which is one of the most compelling things to me right now, is fighters who have debuted in the UFC this year. I think when they're fighting, you know, not another fighter who's debuting, like someone who's had at least one UFC fight, I think they're 7-46 or something like this year.
Yikes.
So there's guys like, and that's why when we do our staff picks, like if it's a debuting guy against someone who's been in the UFC at least once,
automatically,
I'm picking the guy who's been in the UFC because debuting fighters have struggled really, really bad this year. And that's kind of interesting to me. And, you know, a lot of them short notice replacements, stuff like that. Maybe the odds aren't stacked in their favor. But a guy like Mike Perry got the call, you know, a little while ago. So it's very interesting to me seeing that, seeing new guys come in. They have not done well at all in the UFC this year.
Mike Perry's fun. I spoke to him last week. The guy's got some swagger, man. He's got a little attitude to him.
Yeah, and so. those two are the best
dressed. But Hungry Lim is massive, dude. Oh, yeah. They were the best dressed.
he is an absolutely massive guy for that division. And, I was surprised seeing him in person for the first time. You are a large man for that division.
No doubt. All right, real quick, Mike, tell me you sat there tonight, Professional Fighters Association, the official launch. Optimistic, pessimistic, what do you think?
I don't know. It's hard to say because you see they're kind of saying the right things in a lot of ways, but in the same time they're not. I mean, I think there are some legitimate points. The conversation between the MMA FA and this new Fighters Association, I think they need to get on the same page in some way. Like, I don't like the seeming hostility that's coming between those two sides. They need to figure something out in some sort of way to make it work because I think that's one of the biggest obstacles. You're trying to unite fighters to push back in the against the organization, but then you have different groups that are trying to unite the fighters
in
different
like
ways.
Undermine the whole
and
effort.
Yeah, it's like you guys need to get on this. And that's what Matt Mitrione was saying. He was like, can't we all just get along? He said very vocally in the press conference. And I think they need to get on the same page in some way. And that's kind of what stood out to me was just we were listening to Jeff talk and he brought up the MMAFA. Like they took the gloves off tonight towards them. Before it was like, you know, a few subtle comments here and there, but tonight it was all out there. They seem like they're very opposed to the MMAFA, and that's something that bothers me. I think, you know, we're trying to unite the fighters. We're trying to push back, and these guys can't even get on the same page. So that was something that stood out to me. But generally speaking, I personally am. You're gonna have a very hard time asking me a question or putting me in a situation where I'm not going to give you an answer that I feel is going to be the one that's in the fighter's best interest. I'm a guy who always thinks these guys deserve more. They put in the work, and girls, of course, and I always want the best for them. And I feel these guys think the same way. You know, Lucas Middlebrook had the quote, yeah, I'm going to be doing a lot of pro bono work in the upcoming months. And I think they're willing to do that and put that in, but I don't know how it's going to play out. I don't
like
think
a nice paycheck at the end of that pro bono.
Well, of course he would.
Yeah, that's
not
the light at the end of the
and,
tunnel.
I can't remember. I think it was Ariel Helwani who asked the question, like, you know, what's in this for you? People don't, you know, it's human nature. We all know out there. You could say you could be the nicest person in the world, but at the end of the day, whether it's just the recognition from, you know, donating to charity or doing this and that, there's something self-serving behind pretty much everything we do as people. And of course, these guys have it, but you know, whether if they work this out and then they take a nice cut at the end of it, okay. But if they can make this happen, that would be great. So it's just very compelling. But it's going to be one of these stories that we're all in the industry. We're going to be talking about this for a long time to come. This isn't something that's going to get resolved in the next 2 months, 6 months. It could be, you know, a few years down the line before all this stuff happens. And who knows if it unravels before then. If, you know, it was very, very interesting listening to Adam Hill talk about this earlier. I was fascinated. I was just sitting there kind of listening very intently to what he had to say, because it was a very interesting take. And it's important that we are doing this at such a big fight week. That was brilliant of them to book this press conference when all the media is in town. I was surprised there wasn't more fighters and managers there. I think the only manager we saw there was the lady from Paradigm. Mm-hmm. I can't recall her name, but she asked a couple of interesting questions about, you know, back pay and all this kind of stuff. And I was a little surprised we didn't see a bigger presence there. I know Nick Diaz was supposed to be there, but he, of course, didn't attend for whatever reason. He was probably out at the club or something, Snapchatting. But
that USADA test that you had to deal with.
Yeah, so I think, but this is going to be something that's going to be a story that's going to go on and on. But right now, it's very nice to see that at least we're addressing it in a bigger setting. It's not just, you know, guys like us talking about it on, you know, podcasts where it's like a little more under the radar. This is something that was bigger, that was out there. And, you know, Rob Macy has put in a lot of work with the MMAFA, but in the same time, these guys, in the week since they sent out the original press conference and or the press release and set up the website, I feel like they've done made infinitely more progress already on this. And it might even be like just a 1% step forward, and we could have 99% more to go. But at least, you know, it's something that's becoming more out there, more public, and just more people are becoming aware of. And that's getting people talking, people like you and me, even just fans, all that. That's only a benefit. Even if it doesn't work out now, it's only a good thing.
No doubt. Well, Cole Coffey, you had a chance to pull aside a current UFC fighter, Leslie Smith, who did show up.
Yeah.
She had some things to say. She participated very much in the Q&A session. She had some great things to say. She is one of those that is going out on a limb right now, leading the charge.
Of course, note, Leslie Smith is managed by the guys who are, you know, running the stuff. So take that with a grain of salt, her presence.
Yeah.
You know, she is working with the people that are she is managed by the people that are trying to set up this organization.
Yeah,
very true.
Yeah, at the very end, I saw her kind of sit down and powwow, and they were almost sort of reviewing notes on how well the thing went. You know, she was giving them feedback, they were giving her feedback, you know, so you could definitely tell there was some.
But nonetheless, I mean, the fact that she's going
out
there and even
doing
that, she is still a contracted UFC fighter. She just fought Cyborg on a huge card in Brazil. Like, she has, she's not, you know, a nobody fighter. People know who Leslie Smith is. She's been in some big fights. She is a known name, and the fact that she was there and speaking out is, you know, huge props to her. I hope that the UFC doesn't treat her poorly. Or, I mean, what can you say? The UFC helped her get a tumor removed, which she had done earlier today, so they already helped her in some ways. But I just hope this doesn't prevent her from, you know, getting her next fight a year down the line or anything like that.
Yeah, and you pretty much capped it up and kind of said what we actually talked a little bit about. Yeah, I mean, we pretty much talked, and she went on and goes to say that she is willing to help carry the mantle and carry this forward. And we did touch on the fact of, you know, that she got things taken care of about the UFC. So the squeaky wheel got a little bit of oil and taken care of. So that's good. So, but it was great. You know, Leslie, she's always been a good interview, and it's fun seeing her over the years, you know, becoming more and more of a vocal piece for women's MMA, as well as now, in a sense, what MMA fighters should be, how they should be handled and dealt with. You know, she is willing to go on the line and put her neck out there, and I commend her for it, and absolutely. You can hear her talk about it here.
All right, we're here. We just got done hearing a speech by the Professional Fighters Association, you know, talking about their desire to create this union and whatnot. I guess, what are your initial thoughts and feeling on this? Is this a wonderful step, or is this something we're still a little unsure? I mean, like, what sort of things, when this comes out, I mean, is this something that excites you? Because especially when we heard the story recently when you were dealing with some health issues, that right now, outside of the fight game, there's nothing there for you. So does this excite you? I mean, what's your initial feelings about this?
I'm thrilled. I'm glad to be here right now. I think Jeff Boris is a professional, and I think he's very good at what he does. And it was wonderful to hear him standing up and talking about the issues that we're facing and proposing real solutions to it and hearing his plan for dealing with all those issues. It's wonderful because everyone's been agreeing for such a long time that fighters are been getting the short end of the stick, and then they're like, yeah, sucks for you, and then they walk away. And so to have people going to bat for us, that's wonderful. It's a really big deal. It's very inspiring.
Is this the kind of thing, like, when you talk about things, when you guys hear about unions, is this the thing that fighters talk about when you guys are kicking outside of training? Is this the thing that might come up and you guys are like, wouldn't it be nice if this existed? I mean,
it's the kind of thing that comes up if I'm in the conversation.
Well, tell us a little bit. You actually, I happened over here, I was eavesdropping, but since you went out and, you know, you were talking about different things, you said that the UFC actually got off their butts a little bit and kind of reached out a little bit and actually sent you to somebody.
Yeah, I actually got the tumor removed today, this afternoon. Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, they reached out and gave me a phone call and said, can we help you out with this? And sent me to a doctor and got it done. It's a beautiful thing. It's awesome how smoothly things can work when that's the goal, is to make them work.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's probably frustrating when it was one of those things that for a while you didn't probably feel like you had a voice and had to go through all these steps to finally make them aware that, hey, there's other things outside of just, you know, injuries or whatnot that need to get taken care of, you know. And so I think that maybe the dialogue, the discussion starting to take place is probably a step in the right direction that you guys have probably been hoping for quite some time.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful thing that there's all these voices talking about the need for improved conditions for fighters, and that there's all these ears that are listening. This is the best possible situation we could have right now, and it's only going to get better from here.
What do you think it's going to take before fighters really start calling for it and asking for it? Do you think it's already starting to happen? Do you think, you know, they have to, you know, I mean, I guess how soon, if you had a crystal ball and you could, you know, foresee the future, how long do you think something like this till it gets off the ground?
I have never done this before, and I don't have a crystal ball, but I do know that this ball is rolling, and it's been rolling for a long time, but it's rolling a lot faster than it ever had and it ever has, and it's gathering a lot of steam, and there's more going on. It's being taken more seriously. There's more fighters who are coming together, and having the backing of all the other major athletic teams is huge. It's like we've been validated in a way. The UFC has done a great job of bringing this business up to where it is right now. The $4 billion sale totally shows that. They've done an amazing job of that. And the next step has been what it is right now, which is to get people paying attention and treating us like a sport, just like MLB or NHB or Major League Soccer. So, you know, they're recognizing us. And as a little sister, I will say that's like the toughest thing, is to get recognized. And so that's huge. I'm thrilled.
And what's great, I guess, because you're kind of now out here in the front really talking about things and doing this, is that an active role that you wouldn't mind maybe taking on and really sort of promoting to other fighters and saying, like, hey, this is something we all really need to start this discussion? Is that something that maybe you're kind of willing to embrace or already kind of taking on, you know, without really even thinking about it?
Well, I've definitely been thinking about it. There were quite a few thoughts that got me here to this point, standing in front of you and talking at the closing of this Fighters Association press conference. A lot of thought has brought to it me to this point right now, and I'm really happy to be here, and I hope that I can continue to play a part in getting the fighters recognized as much as possible.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Leslie Smith being on the leading edge of this Fighters Association. All right, so we talked a little bit of business. We talked about what's going on, but now, first of all, it's just time to end this day. It's been a long day.
It is. I still got to go back and edit this thing. And it's funny, I was just thinking about it, you know, because I saw a note that Agent H had said about how she had dyed her hair, you know, another color. And I was like, wait, that was yesterday. And I still haven't seen it because it's fight week, you know. It's like you miss days, you know. It's like we're two passing ships. And, yeah, I'm ready to get back and get this thing edited and maybe try to wake up in the morning and actually see her before for, you know, go another third day without actually seeing stuff.
Well, we're just a few hours away from early weigh-ins. Then we got a UFC 204 press conference. Then we got the ceremonial weigh-ins. But at least we get to call it a day kind of
public weigh-ins. We've heard many, many names of it. Is that what they're sticking
with ceremony wins. They took our lead. I think we led with that. We called it ceremony wins.
I think so. You know, they tend to pay attention to what we say.
Totally.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure we've made fights, you know, by talking about them and
totally.
You know,
no.
And if fixes happen, it could be because we talked about them as well. You know, you never know.
All right. Well, listen. Yeah, it is all about UFC 202 this weekend. We are kicking off one hell of a run, man. We'll be in Vancouver next week. We'll be in Germany, Cleveland.
You will.
Well, I'll be in Germany, then Cleveland, and I don't even know, man. There's a lot of flying going on. That's all I know. October 22nd, the stat man says, is the next off weekend, and who knows? They might even add.
They might even book one last minute.
Sounds like a whole lot of and a half episodes coming soon. So in the meantime, we're gonna let Cold Coffee wrap things up, get out of here because he's got some editing to do. Me, I've got some frosty beverages to consume. So with that in mind, thanks for listening.
I can hear your coughs right in my eardrums.
Yes, I was coughing in your ear. I think so. We just got to turn Simon down.
Down or off?
Both.
Kenny's back.
All right.
He's back in the game.
Here he is.
Boom shakalaka. Can we talk about Simon even though he's right there?
Absolutely.
Good. A right tosser. I don't know if that means anything.
I think it's somebody that jerks off.
Like, does that actually mean anything? I feel like I've heard it said before.
I was right.
Is that what it means? Like a jerk off?
Give it a wank. Yeah, maybe you shouldn't.
I'm sure it'll still make the cut. I'm sure we can still hear it.
We're still rolling? That's what's up.
That's what's up.
Are we on 718 right now?
718.
You just want to keep letting it roll?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
That's an award-winning burp right there.
That was solid. We'll be right back.